Welcome to Better Call Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
I mushmouthed that intro. Better Call Saul. Couldn't do it. Today
well,
we're talking about
judge.
We're talking about season 2, episode 7, titled Inflatable. I think everybody knows what the title's all about, yes?
Yeah.
It's pretty overt, this episode.
The dancing
noodle man. Mm-hmm. Wacky, waving, inflatable, arm-flailing tube man. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, I think so.
The
dancing socks.
Real good stuff. Real good stuff. I like that montage a lot, but we'll get there. Do you have anything you want to talk about up front before we get into the recap?
Do you want to just talk about general, like, yay-nay impressions?
Sure.
What'd you think?
I liked it a lot.
Okay.
Without that middle montage, I felt like it really needed that to kind of break up just the flow of the episode a little bit, give us something to sit back, enjoy, and laugh at.
Yeah.
But overall, like, the pieces really came together for me.
Yeah, I felt like it was a kind of a down episode, and I'm not as big a fan of the sock montage as a mini R,
really?
Seems like.
Okay.
I mean, I'm definitely conflicted because, you know, on the one hand, it was a lot of fun, and Kelly Dixon edited her fucking heart out. I can't even imagine the amount of time and effort it took to sync that up and get all those cuts and just the pile of film that she had to sort through to get that to work. But I kept thinking, like, oh, it's just a bit much. Like, plus it's Jimmy at kind of his most unlikable. When he's taking out on decent people his own bad decision making process.
Yeah, you don't like to see that.
It's like a guy coming home and kicking his dog. It ain't the dog's fault that you had a bad day. Or
sure.
Poor life decisions, and that's like I found Jimmy throughout this episode really unlikable. He finally pulled it out with a rare flash of honesty with Kim at the end.
Right, much needed.
But I think his takeaway is going to be that I fucked up. I came clean with somebody, and it blew up in my face. Rather than nope, you just avoided yet another life disaster. But we can talk about that.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying. Like, that doesn't mean it's a bad episode. It just means I'm shaking my head ruefully at the wreckage of this man's life.
Right, and I think you're in the minority there. I think so many people just really loved seeing Jimmy do a sort of, you know, proto-Saul sort of thing, you know, with his suits and with bagpipes and, like, all that stuff. You can really see the beginnings of Saul, and I feel like...
Yeah, and if I thought Cliff was eyebrows, Bogdanovan, I would have been rooting him on. But since
you like
Cliff
too much.
Cliff is a good guy.
Right, he is. He is. No arguments there. But let's get into the recap. We'll talk more about it when we get there.
Yep.
We start off with Jimmy's dad getting conned, despite Jimmy's best efforts to warn him of such.
Were you surprised that when you heard on the Insider podcast that this actually was filmed last season?
Yeah, episode 109, they were going to air this thing, but it ran too long, and they decided we have to cut something, let's cut this and use it later.
I think that's I admire Vince's gumption to film this scene, which was excellent, and also you could argue, I could see as a creator, that this is a bedrock scene. You've got to understand and appreciate this about Jimmy.
Right.
And just instead of trimming 30 seconds off every other scene, and God knows what impact that would have, to just be like, nope, we gotta murder our baby here.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was commendable. And the fact that, you know, it shows his patience, because he had to wait one season and 8 more episodes.
Right.
To actually get this in. But do you think it actually worked better to have Chuck kind of put that out there and have us be like, Kim, like, I'm not sure if I believe this or not.
Right, the
and
story then, of Jimmy stealing from his father's store.
And I already feel like we're seeing
like
a little shade of gray on Chuck's story here, too.
Right. I mean, you get the distinct impression here that if he just listened to Jimmy, who's, what, 10 years old?
I seem like he's about
12.
12, yeah.
Something like that. It's August 1973, so I don't know what math you want to do, but there it is. It seems like if he just listened to his son, he would get taken less advantage of, and that him taking that money was almost like a reward for catching this crook in an act, right? Like,
I took it as more like, if someone's going to take old money from my old man, it might as well be me.
Right. He's just going to give all this money away anyway, so why not?
Because,
take some for myself.
Because he essentially, like, $10 is going to walk out that store.
Right.
Jimmy reclaimed 8 of it. I mean, it's not you know,
because you got maybe inventory. Like four or something. Sure,
but
yeah.
But whatever. It's, you know, the guy only walked out as a store with two, mm-hmm. and I don't know. I just felt like this was. First of all, like, so now I don't know that much money walked out of the till. I feel like that a lot of this was, you know, his old man just getting taken advantage of.
Right. So there's that $14,000, I think, number that Chuck threw out there last few episodes ago. You wonder how much of that is actually Jimmy taking it and how much of it is Chuck doesn't know that his father's just giving money away.
And it would not shock me if we see another cold open towards the end of the season where mm-hmm. you see Jimmy racked with guilt, put the money back in the till.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like,
and that is in which case then Chuck is just completely wrong. His old man got taken advantage of and did it to himself, and he's been holding against Jimmy. And you start thinking like, man, how much? Because Jimmy's already on the path to being Jimmy. He's
sure. Yeah.
He's, you know,
he's so adept at this stuff already that
yeah. He's reading Playboys. Why he should be sweeping and already kind of taking advantage.
That's every kid. That's nothing out of the normal. But the thing that he spots with this lie.
Sure. And in fact, he knows what the word grift means and all that stuff.
Right.
I think. If it doesn't turn out to be that Jimmy puts the money back, then it's going to be a big tragedy because. You got to wonder how much of that experience and his brother's mistrust of him contributes to him being Slippin' Jimmy.
Right, right. And it's also a story of tragedy from his father's angle, too, right? Like, maybe, you know, the moral that, like, kindness doesn't pay is going to be part of this story. Like,
yeah.
Like, Chuck's trying to do the right thing. Although Chuck is a successful lawyer. There's nothing in his life that says it. But if his father goes out of business because he just can't stop giving money to people who are lying to him,
yeah,
then that's an interesting angle, I guess, for the story to take. And maybe influences, like, why Jimmy becomes the character that he is, because he doesn't want to be... He almost tries to skirt a little closer to that wolf line than he does the sheep line, because sure. The sheep line doesn't pay at all.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, like, might ruin you.
You say that Chuck's a successful lawyer, and that's the counterexample. But on the other hand, we also know that Chuck is a crazy recluse as well.
Right.
So ultimately, yeah. How much of his, you know, virtuous path, how much did that really pay off?
Yeah.
You know, bad things happen to good people, et cetera.
Right, and Rebecca's missing at this point. We don't know what happened
probably,
to her.
Probably, I think he murdered her and buried her in his crawl space.
Likely, melted her in a barrel. It's
the telltale metronome. Yep.
Sure. But yeah, so the way that you can kind of peg this to a date is obviously that Playboy and all these other magazines up there on the shelf.
Was there anything significant in that particular issue of Playboy?
Not that I could tell.
And I didn't even mention on Insider, but I remember wanting to, and I ran out of time. I remember wanting to see like if I could get a article list
mm-hmm.
because it could just be that they say, hey, find us a Playboy. That's the right age we needed to be, or it could be like if we got just choice of 12 Playboys, I would buy that Vince would find something that would have I don't know what I'm looking for here, something about sunroofs in Chicago or
okay right I didn't see anything about that on Reddit where they were talking about these magazines
sure
so then we go back to present day. Mike and Jimmy meet with a judge. I think mm-hmm. she's a judge. To tell her that the gun was not Tuco's.
No, I think it's the district attorney.
Is it the DA?
Yeah.
I thought I saw like a picture of her with a bunch of other judges in the
back.
Well,
that would make was she wearing a black robe?
Yeah, I think. I don't
know. So it could be the judge and the district attorney, or just the... I thought it was the DA and the assistant DA.
Okay,
but
could
I don't
be.
Know.
Could be. There was... I wish they had like a name plaque or something on her desk. Like, DA? Who's a what's it? Afterward, Jimmy tells Mike about his run-in with Tuco in order to kind of make him feel better about giving in to the Salamanca's threats, and that does not please Mike at all.
No.
Shoves him out of the elevator, says, catch the next one, fool.
The judge/DA saying, did Mr. Salamanca threaten or bribe you, really, really struck deep.
Right, because, you know, Mike isn't a guy who gets threatened all that often, and he's probably feeling bad about that.
Not only that, but this is his dirty cop shit. Coming back again,
sure.
Like reminding
of
him
reasons,
of his, of his, and then when Jimmy deliberately says discretion is a better part of valor, I think this his personal code and his pride and his guilt over his son and all that is all being brought back by this experience.
For sure. Then Jimmy calls Kim to ask if she has told Howard she's quitting yet, and she says, no, I'm not going to tell him until I have offer in hand, because that'd be a bad idea.
Fucking idiot. Yeah.
Jimmy's asking a lot of questions about her stuff, you know, like, how much money you got left on your college loans, like, how much are they paying you?
Which I thought was really weird.
What's the bump going to be?
Like...
But you see why, yeah. In retrospect, he's feeling her out for an offer here.
Well, and also trying to see whether, you know, she could conceivably go on her own.
And if he could cover the cost later on to buy her out, essentially.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yep. A lot of stuff he's doing there in the background. He's kind of just working his game on her a little bit, sure. You know? Which, I don't know if that influences her decision later, but maybe it should. Then we go to Jimmy in his office, and he begins drafting a letter of resignation. But Omar tells him, look, if you resign, you have to pay back all this bonus money. And I think at that point we see, oh, okay, so he was feeling Kim out. He needs this bonus money for something.
It's a seed money.
What kind of connections are we making right now? He tells Omar, look, forget it. I never told you this. It was just a momentary lapse of stress. Like... it was all getting to me. And then as he's driving, he sees this inflatable tube man on the side of the road in a gas station or something, and he gets an idea.
Yeah.
And then there's a big, long montage of Jimmy annoying the shit out of Cliff until he fires him, which I love. I think it's great.
Yeah. So apparently this song's Scorpio by Dennis Coffey. Mm-hmm. I thought, and I don't know whether it's sampled in Young MC's Bust a Move, but it sounds like the identical, like, you know, bass line and drum. I don't know what you call that whole thing, the whole rhythm package from that. So I was, like, shocked that it was a different song. But, man, Kelly Dixon went to work on this. The way this that she manipulated the frame rate and the editing to make it look like the Windsock guy was dancing to the music.
Right.
And just the you know, you also got to give credit to the guy shooting it, too, because, you know, she has to have all this footage to begin with. But I don't know. I've always loved those Windsock things. I remember the first time I saw it thinking, like, it's just like put a smile on your face. Like, it looks like that fucking dude is dancing.
Yeah, he's partying.
It's such a simple gimmick, but it's a relatively modern invention. And I still to this day, like, when I can't help it but to... smile when I see it, like, you know, set to music. It's even that much better.
Yeah,
but
and then this man essentially becoming the inflatable tube man.
sure. They had to custom make that, right?
What do you mean custom
make
it?
The inflatable windsock.
Oh,
guy.
With all the colors.
Well, just the hair. Like, it looks like Jimmy. It looks like a Lego man version of Jimmy.
They might have sourced it. I don't know, but who knows? But it's pretty easy to put him in the same colors as a tube man.
Yeah.
That's kind of Saul's MO.
And
anyway.
Just like all the ties dancing around on the racks and the suits dancing around on the racks and the tritage of him buttoning up shirts and shit. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm watching this guy defraud a good man that has done nothing but try to help him at every step of the way.
Yeah,
and that's what really that's again seeing Jimmy at his most unlikable. It's a little bit of a problem for me.
Yeah, I didn't care. I was having too much fun. Okay. Too much fun watching him.
The other thing is, I feel like maybe Vince is a little bit more lowbrow as far as like the humor, you know, like the unflushed shit and the juicer and like the juice spraying on the guy, like that's. Really? That's some Nickelodeon shit, man.
I did not have any problem with it. He's trying to get fired. He's doing shit that's stupid and ridiculous to try to get fired. How is that a problem? To me, it was awesome.
I don't know. I feel like that they definitely crossed the line to cause. Like, you know, playing the juicer at max volume. And I mean, I feel like that a law... This is the wrong shit to pull with a law firm, you know?
Right.
And maybe that's Cliff's point. Like, I could
take
you to court and fuck you over, but it's not worth my I'd rather scrape you off the bottom of my shoe.
Yeah. He's just done with him at that point. And I love the fucking bagpipes. The way that they just wheeze, like the entire time they're wheezing while they're having this conversation, this horrible sound. And then he sets him down on the desk after he's like, come into my office.
Yeah.
Sets him down and he's like, this is horrible noise.
Yeah.
Leaking from these bags.
Yeah. So like I said, I appreciate the execution on this thing. And I was laughing despite myself, mostly at the edits and the sock guy. But I thought Jimmy itself is like, yeah. This guy.
And Jimmy's like, oh, you can hear that through the door? I didn't realize it. I love it. I thought it was amazing. Also, I would love to do this. I would love to see where the line is, how far you can push things before you get fired.
I guess. I would. I feel like I've only fantasized about this when I've worked for some asshole company.
Right.
I've never fantasized about this when I've been in a good job that's treating me well and giving me everything I need to succeed. So it's like that's the dissonance. It's like he's treating this like a Dilbert experience when it's like this white glove, awesome experience. And it also it's like, oh, it's bumming Omar out. I feel like that was another thing that he feel like, you know, Omar... you know, what is Omar's role here as a legal assistant? Like, his fortune kind of rise and falls with his boss, and he's, through no fault of his own, hitched his wagon to this guy who just ran the wagon off the fucking cliff, you know? Okay. Didn't you get a little bit of, like, Omar was bummed out about this?
No, not really. Hmm. I thought Omar was just, like, you're crazy, dude.
Yeah,
You're giving up a lot of good stuff here, and... You're going to give up your bonus by resigning? Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I didn't think Omar was feeling bad for himself. I thought he was, like, questioning, what the hell is Saul?
I do feel like I've got this formula where my pleasure at Jimmy's antics is inversely proportionate to how much the target deserves it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's reasonable. I'm not going to say you should have been enjoying this when clearly you have some hang-ups, but... then we go over to Kim.
Also, that's the other thing. You know, I guess Aaron's been written as a pain in the ass, but again, she's just doing her job. And at the end, I felt like after he has this thing, this moment with Cliff, where he's like, hey, you know, for what it's worth, I think you're a good guy. And Cliff's like, well, yeah, you're an asshole. And he's kind of contrite. It felt so petty to go to Aaron and throw her cannon to the non-recyclable.
I don't even know why he did it.
Because he's an asshole. And we're all rooting
for
him.
No, no, no. I don't understand what bothered him about that.
Oh, because that's the very first thing she did when she became his hall monitor was explain their recycling program and how he's blatantly violating it.
Oh, okay.
Although, the one thing I will come back around and say, Cliff might deserve this, because what fucking monster puts a mesh, has organic trash in a mesh wastebasket?
Mm.
You're going to throw coffee grounds and banana peels and, like, he's the kind of guy that throws a used condom in a wicker basket. Like, what the fuck, Cliff?
Okay.
That shit leaks. Right. That shit gets gross. You just put it in a strainer. Congratulations.
Yeah, I don't understand the purpose of a trash can with holes in it, honestly. Like, trash can's there to throw junk in.
Like, if you got it, like, that's the thing.
If like, it's if next you, to, like, the Xerox machine, maybe.
Sure,
but
if,
like,
if it's only going to be for paper trash.
Yeah.
But those, I'm with you, man. Anything that's a porous waste basket.
What's the point? Like, fill it up. Fill the holes in, and I can use it for anything.
Yeah,
you're just making a specialized waste can that no one wants.
Yeah. Like, it's almost like it's for looks. It's like the guest towels, you know? Yeah. The monogram that you're not intended to actually use.
Right. Or the shaped soaps or something.
Yeah,
like,
it's a decorative trash can. What?
Yeah. It's weird. So we go over to Kim, who's... also resigning, writing her letter of resignation when Jimmy shows up to ask her to go into business with him. Takes her into the conference room and does this whole spiel. And she is attracted to the idea of being her own boss. And then she asks Jimmy what kind of lawyer he'd be if they went into business. And he says, after some hesitation, well, I'd have to be myself. I'm not fitting in anywhere else.
He starts telling her the big lie.
And then to his credit, he comes out and says, yes, I will be a little colorful.
Yes.
Which... fits perfectly with the montage we saw earlier. That's what Jimmy's going to be. Kim questions kind of why they need to work together when they're already a couple.
That's a hell of a question.
It is, yeah.
And that's the other big head scratcher. I don't get Jimmy's disappointment in the final suggestion she makes. This seems like it's the perfect thing.
Yeah, so she declines the offer. I do feel like it's strange that he needs to make her his entire life. Like, he's already got part of her, the part of her that is kind of more important, her heart, right? Like,
honestly, although, I feel like like a married couple or a couple they're dating that would work like 24/7.
That's too much.
Seems like it would be too much. It seems like it'd be a powder keg waiting to blow. It seems like it'd be 10 Cloverfield Lane. But
sure.
I don't know. But you know, Jimmy, I don't feel like he has a great ability to plot out a long-term outcome and foresee the pitfalls. Or like, hey, maybe we ease into this, that, the other. It's like, but it's interesting. Did you think that there was a little bit to, you know, when she's with the interview with Schweikert, which I think is coming up. Is it?
Or not yet.
It's not yet. But she says, you know, like, you know, what does she want in life? And she says more. Like, that's what Jimmy's problem is, too. It's like, he literally just got in bed with Kim. And I don't know, maybe they had a relationship. That's something we debated before. But he literally just re-got into the bed with Kim. Mm-hmm. And now he essentially wants to get business married, too.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, dude, slow down.
And that idea of more is a dangerous idea because it's not well defined, right? More is literally just something other than what you currently have. Something more than what you currently have. And that gets you into a lot of trouble. If you're never satisfied with anything, if you're always looking for the next opportunity, I feel like that's not a great way to live. But, you know, who am I?
No,
who am I to say?
Well, I mean,
I think this is the smartest decision Kim ever made, is to turn this down.
Pat Riley, the basketball coach, has this theory he calls the disease of more.
Okay.
Where it's like, you know, you've got a championship team. They just won a championship. At the end of that game, they're the happiest they've ever been. The very next day, I need a higher salary. And this guy is getting more endorsement deals than me. And like, that's why it's so hard for teams to repeat championships, is because the thing that made them successful is the very forces that take these competitive people and pull them apart.
Right.
I feel like, when you're saying that more is not, I believe in the theory of the disease of more. It can be, pretty bad. Yeah. Before we move on, did you get a little nostalgic for the initial formation of Bald Move watching? Like, When I
came to you with the business card and I said, this is going to be...
And I ripped it in half and said, I don't know, two mics.
We can share offices.
One table. No, I mean, like, the whole, like, insanity of, like, are we going to do this?
Right. It's a difficult thing to do, to start, like, a business. I mean, throughout this, I feel for Jimmy, I feel for Kim, like, all these people who are kind of stuck in places they don't want to be. I totally understand the thing of, I want to be my own boss. That's, like, the greatest feeling.
Sure.
In the world, if you can make it work.
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea of more is not, it's not something that I'm on board with.
No,
necessarily.
But, no, I'm not trying to make an I'm just saying that, like, when they were talking about this and whether they should do it or not and all that, I got a little bit of that nostalgia of, like, what it was like to be like, man, is this even something we can do, and should we, and should we wait a year and all that?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But I think that's the thing about Jimmy here, is he also wants more, right? Like, they're similar in that regard, and
totally
him and Kim's relationship is not enough for him, and that's why he's asking her to do this, because he wants more.
Where's that coming from? Is he that insecure?
I don't know.
He has to, like,
I mean, if you go with the idea of being a sheep or a wolf, maybe he's just pressing the advantages he has, you know. He wants to be the wolf and have more.
Or, like, I need to lock her down before she wises up.
Yeah, some maybe.
There's something about his relationship with his father, maybe brother, that's to this. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I feel like he's the proverbial drowning man, and she is the YMCA lifeguard, and she goes over to, it's like, hey, you know, you have, and he just grabs onto her and drowns them both, you know?
Right, and I definitely felt, throughout this episode, and I've been feeling this for a lot of episodes, I think inflatable is a good name for this particular episode, because...
Ah, she's his life preserver.
Well, I wasn't going there.
I like where you're going, Jim. Let's talk about that.
Not where I was going. But Jimmy has been trying to turn himself into something that he's not. He's been inflating himself up into this particular type of lawyer.
Dancing weird sock man.
Right. And it comes off as fake, and then eventually he, you know... He has to give that up. He can't sustain it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Let's go over to Stacy and Mike. Stacy's showing Mike a house, and she wants to move in, but it is a lot of money. Mike says, "Look, don't worry about the money. I'll take care of it." And she decides, "I'm going to take the house." And so she does. There are a couple of Breaking Bad Easter eggs in this scene.
Well, I was going to see if you're going to go off on yet another goddamn Breaking Bad cameo.
Oh, that's right. The realtor. Yeah, that's one of the Easter eggs I was going for.
Okay.
So this realtor is the same realtor that was at the house where Marie stole from.
The spoon, right?
I think in season 5 of Breaking Bad. Right, she steals a spoon.
That's one of the things she steals. I can't remember what exactly gets her in trouble, but yeah she's accused of theft.
But this lady has chopped off all her hair and lost a bunch of weight.
I knew
and
she
gotten
looked,
older, obviously.
I knew she looked familiar. I'm like, I've seen this woman somewhere. And I also, knowing that they like to use local talent, I said, I bet she was in some part of Breaking Bad, too. But I couldn't. I didn't know she was that person.
She is. And it's wild. She looks very different. Very, very different. But it is the same person. And then the other Easter egg is this is the actual exterior when Mike's outside and he's going to his car and you can see the house in the background. Mm-hmm. This is Stacy's house. They use the same house that Stacy actually was shown living in episode 313 of Breaking Bad when Mike drops off Kaylee at Stacy's house. Same house. So I thought that was cool just to say, hey, this is the house Stacy's going to be in for a while.
Right.
You know?
But the interior...
The interior is a different set, is a different place. Yeah.
Which they do that quite a bit.
Yeah, that's what TV does. What are you going to do?
Before
anything
we,
to say about this?
Well, I just... You know, I've always thought that Mike's arc was more about Kaylee, but there's something about... I mean, you think about how Stacy treated him in the beginning, mm-hmm. and how cold and standoffish and kind of like hated Mike, and now she's hugging him and calling him Pop. And I know there's still some people debating whether she's playing him or not. I don't get that at all. I think this is a genuine reaction. Maybe she's foolish to accept all this without any questioning about where it's coming from. And, you know, maybe, I don't know. I'm a weirdo. I've got a lot of trust issues. If my dad offered to buy me a fucking house, I'd be like, whoa, no, what?
Where are the strings?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I realize I'm bringing a lot of my own baggage to this, but. I can't judge her. She seems like she's genuine. And,
I think so.
You know, Mike, I don't think, is the type that, like, yeah, obviously this is putting him in a bind that he doesn't need to be in. But he's so racked with guilt and I think genuine. Like, he's not going to hold it against her that, you know, he's not going to hold the own decisions he makes to make these promises work against her.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because he's clearly conflicted. You know, that last scene where, you know, once she takes off and he's just kind of sitting there looking pensive, he's like, oh, God.
He knows what it's going to take to keep her in this house.
It ain't
going to
be the parking garage job.
No, it's not.
It ain't going to be watching over the dork with the Humvee. It's going to be a lot more of the high dollar stuff.
Absolutely. That's got to weigh on his mind, especially after the stuff he's just been through. It's like he's got more of that in store for him, probably. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy pulls up to the nail salon at night and puts his Coco Bolo desk in his office with Omar's help. And after Omar leaves, Jimmy sets everything up on his desk and he records a message on his answering machine. The first one, he uses the fake British accent. He goes into his
Mrs.
His
Doubtfire imitation.
Then he deletes that one and he records one straight. Why do you think he does this?
I hope it's because he realizes how fucking ridiculous it is, but I doubt it since that's the, I don't know, like he's trying to, or maybe he does, because that's the thing, like, that's what Kim said in the beginning, like, all these scams in isolation are clever, but in aggregate, they're going to get you killed, or not killed, they're going to get you caught up in something that you can't talk yourself out of, so like, you know, it seems like it's such an obscene advantage that you've got this panic button that you can push where you've got this gift of gab and you can talk yourself out of any situation. That's such an incredible competitive advantage in life. Why not just use it as the panic button instead of just your fucking go-to?
Yeah.
I hope that's showing a maturity of his character. I've seen him in Breaking Bad. I know that's not true.
Right.
But I think he's trying. Like
it felt to me like maybe it was almost his warm up for another run at Kim in the future. Like
he's going to double that. Well,
right. Like he's going to try and Davis and Maine himself in order to impress Kim. And that's just not going to work.
Well, not only that, but I feel like that my big fear is that this honest approach he took with Kim, he's not going to get the lesson from well, you know, I was honest with her up front, and it wouldn't have worked out long term. And so this is all good. I avoided a whole bunch of personal drama and making both of our lives hell. And, oh, yeah, Kim just came back with a reasonable compromise that I should be perfectly happy with. I think he's going to be like, I spoke what was in my true heart, and I was rejected for it, so I can never do this again. So, yeah, you're right. Like, I feel like you're onto something there, that he is going to go a little bit corporate to chase her.
It's just not going to work.
No,
it's
of course
just,
not.
It can't work. Of course not. Jimmy's not that guy.
That's he knows that should it, be the subtitle for Better Call Saul. It's just not going to work. No matter how much you think Jimmy's about, it's not going to work.
For sure. I don't know what else you want to say about this. Omar doesn't want anything to do with Jimmy, yeah?
I don't think he's... I feel like that this should just show a contrast between a whole human being that has a wife and kids, and felt a little
responsibility. And
I felt a little bad because I know he's been working lots of nights and weekends because of Jimmy's shenanigans, and this is like the human cost that he, again, that's what I'm saying. Like, he threw in for this guy because he believed in it and he liked Jimmy, and Jimmy kind of shit on him. So I don't, and I don't think he was bitter about it, but it's like, nah, I don't want to go. I don't want to help you assuage your guilt over what's just gone down. I want to get back to my wife and kids. Enjoy your Coco Bolo.
Okay. That desk, man. Desk does not fit his office in more than one way.
I've never been impressed with that desk. Like, I was expecting some, like, really fucking awesome desk. That looks like something you could buy at IKEA
style.
The Resolute.
Big battle
desk.
Right?
Yeah, sure. The presidential model. I wouldn't spend $7,000 for that desk.
It was one of those like designer desks that is more form than function in a lot of ways.
Like, I've seen desks where it's like, oh, I can't afford it, but if I could, I would definitely spend it on, like, if I was a rich person, money's no object. I'm not going to drop $7,000 on that fucking desk.
Yeah, I'm with you. The desk, it looks cool. It's just not $7,000 cool.
It looks like it comes in a Swedish box and you can bang it together in a couple hours. I mean,
I bet it's sturdier. I bet it'll last longer.
Sure.
But it does look like a Swedish design. I don't know. They do all the best design, don't they?
I guess, but when I hear like
they're
rich,
the new Germans.
When I hear rich rain, you know, exotic rainforest wood, I'm like, you know, showcase that, not how fucking clever your design is.
Right. And it's way too big for his office, right? It doesn't fit both aesthetically and
it fit size-wise. Way better than I thought it would.
Like, I'm surprised it fit in at all.
Because I guess I didn't really pay much attention to it when it was in his office because his office is massive. But I thought that desk was a lot bigger than it was.
Oh, that tiny little one he was using before?
No. I'm talking about
his
Coco Bolo.
His Coco Bolo,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't know if he's going to be able to pull that out of the way to get his bed out. Where's he living now? You think he's living with Kim? Because he's not living in the corporate apartment anymore.
Surely
I can tell you that.
Not. She's not going to. Although, if
she says something about sharing a cab, like later on when she's like,
true.
We're both going downtown. We can just share a cab.
Wow, I didn't. Was she propositioning him to move in with her?
Maybe.
I mean, that's kind of the arc they've been on. They've gone from like, it's 8:30 and you got to go, to like, you know, walking out and kissing each other on the cheek and go on their separate commute, to like maybe just, hey, here's a sock drawer, to hey, here's a house key. I mean, that's kind of the arc. It feels like it's going fast, but
I would like to see next episode something to indicate where he's living, because we know he can't be in that apartment anymore. And that's, you know, it's not something that's super important to the plot.
Sure.
We can assume a lot and it doesn't really ultimately matter, but, you know, that would help me. So we go to Mike, and he parks his car across the street from where he met Tuco's uncle, who we know as Hector
Salamanca. The
Mexican
ice cream parlor.
And he just watches. He just
what
sits there.
What is Mike going to do?
Watches. Those are the exact words in my notes. What is Mike going to do? Any ideas?
Man, I got nothing.
Is he going to go after Hector? Is he going to... I don't know what he's going to do. Knowing what I know about Breaking Bad,
here's what I hope he's doing. I hope he's making a whole bunch of notes on their movements and activities, and he's going to take a notepad to the DA and be like, here's what you need to bury these fuckers.
Okay.
All you got to do is follow up on this and firm it up, but here's my civic, and just walks out, and then, you know.
And he can get away with it because he's anonymous, right? Just like,
sure.
They're not going to say... It's not like saying, no, I'm not going to do the gun thing.
Right. And that's even better. Like, it shows up in a manila folder, like a whole bunch of photos and notes and people he's meeting with, stuff that, you know, I guess if I don't know. Like, why can't the police do that kind of work if it's that easy to do? But in this universe, maybe they're, you know, that he's got some unique insight and not everybody knows that he hangs out at the ice cream parlor. I don't know. But that's my best case scenario. Because
right,
he's not going to kill him. He's not going to kill...
Is he going to try?
What would it prove? How would that buy his honor back?
I don't know. Here's another thing about Mike. We saw last episode, I think, him give the $25,000 back to Nacho because he didn't finish the job, right?
Yep.
Didn't do it the way he wanted.
Sure.
Do you think there's any chance he's going to try and finish that job? He feels some sort of duty to carry out his mission, and he's going to try to get them put away for longer, but without the connection directly to him.
Well, I guess that's what I said. Like, what do you...
Oh, well, I'm saying motivation-wise, like, he feels a little bit of guilt not doing the job.
Yeah, no, that's why he would be doing what he's doing.
He could also be doing it just because they're bad guys.
But it's, you know, interesting that that's still kind of a, you know, you're following up another half measure with another, like, a three-quarter measure.
Okay.
I thought Vince Gilligan said something interesting about that there's a saying that he likes that, you know, if you stay on one, it's from Mr. Miyagi, it's from The Karate Kid. You stay on one side of the road, you're set, you're fine. You stay on one side of the road, you're fine. You stay in the middle of the road, splat. Okay. You know, you get ran over.
Uh-huh.
Is this another middle of the road path that he's trying to take?
It could be. Could be.
But at this point, a full measure would be like rolling in Rambo style and killing everyone in a room, which we know I don't think Mike could do.
It would be planning to take out the cartel.
Yeah.
Like in its entirety. Cause
yes.
Otherwise, it's just going to come back on you at some point, or it has a potential to.
If you could wipe out everybody there, I don't think it would come back on you, and I don't think they would guess that the cop that has been, you know, the ex-cop that's been a thorn in their side would have done something like that.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
But
I feel like that he's going to dig himself out with solid police work.
Yeah, and that's the smartest thing for him to do is just to watch for a while, and I think we might... I don't know. You think next episode we'll see some kind of action on Mike's part, or is he going to be watching for...
We got 12 episodes this season?
10?
Or 10.
I think it's only 10.
I thought it was 12.
I don't know.
Yeah, but it just depends. Like, if it's 10 episodes, then yeah, we need to see something of this next episode. If it's 12, then maybe we go away for a week to kind of let us put this on boil.
Okay. Let's go over to Schweikert and Coakley. Kim's interviewing with them, and they like her. They like her a lot. They talk to her about, you know, the law and cases she's been a part of, and also about her personal history, her past. On the way out, she accidentally calls Rich Howard and realizes that she doesn't really want this lateral move.
Called her ex-boyfriend's name. This is terrible.
Right. Calls her Howard, which we know is Hamlin.
Yeah.
So she the thing that Jimmy said earlier about the lateral move and Howard being the same... Schweikert being the same as Howard has really sunk
clearly
in.
Clearly took root, yep.
And she goes on the roof and she's smoking a cigarette and she pulls out the card and this Wexler McGill card and she tears it in half and she's looking at it.
Ouch.
At first thought was like, oh, she's going to break up with Jimmy. This is not good.
I kind of was smoking what she was, I had smoked what she was doing. Like, as she was doing it.
Okay.
But I was still saying, ouch, because when she shows up with that and shows that to Jimmy, like, I think that that's just like, you know.
He's got to be going, oh, God.
It's like someone stepped on his grave.
Yeah. We do find out here a little bit about Kim, that she is actually from the Kansas-Nebraska border, and we talked a little bit about that last episode with
the
Royals
jersey,
shirt. Yeah. So, makes a lot of sense now.
I just looked it up in the background. It is a 10-episode season.
Okay.
And so is the third season, apparently, that got just renewed.
They're all 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So
we do have a little bit of sense of urgency.
Yeah.
What
do you
talk
think
about that,
Kim's...
Like, 2 weeks ago that it got renewed for third... I don't think we did.
I don't think so.
But yeah, so it did. Congratulations, everybody. We did it.
I don't think anybody's surprised by that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would be odd for me. It would be odd for them to cut it without any fanfare. I was expecting if they renewed it for a third season, there'd be an announcement that it would be like the final season, maybe.
Oh boy, no! They're talking 3, 4, 4, 5. Like they want to do at least 4. I think is what they were talking about.
I mean,
the
show seems like it's stabilized right at 2 million viewers.
Okay.
Which is a, you know, this thing premiered to 7 million in season one, and that's about where Breaking Bad left.
Uh-huh.
So it's really hemorrhaged a lot of Breaking Bad fans, which kind of shocking to me.
I don't know. I have to imagine that it probably will do all right. I don't think it's still probably better than anything else that they've
like, if you look at, you know, Hell on Wheels or Halt and Catch Fire and that. So it's still like, you know, other than, of course, the juggernaut that is the zombie franchise, it's still probably doing good numbers for them.
Right. And they've got, you know, Blu-ray and Netflix and all sorts of stuff, opportunities to make money off this. So I don't think it's in any danger of being canceled, frankly.
Yeah.
Given the pedigree.
Yeah, this might be selfish, or like a lot of people might disagree, but I, Halt and Catch Fire, 0.5 million share.
Yeah, and they were talking about how, you know, shows, their philosophy, AMC's philosophy, is to keep stuff like that on the air because it gives them a little bit of prestige, even if it doesn't make them a ton of money. They make up for it with other shows.
The Walking Dead. Right. I guess I was kind of hoping that this would be a 3-season run. If I knew it was going to be a 5, then that implies other things. Like I'd feel more confident with them going post Breaking Bad if I knew it was going to be a 5-episode run.
I don't know if it's for sure, but I'm almost positive it'll be 4.
Okay.
At the least.
Okay.
At least that's the impression I got listening to the Insider Cast where they talked about this.
Because now, I mean, that's the thing, is like this. I don't want this to sound like a criticism because I've really enjoyed the season, but it is kind of dicked around this season. There's been very little, like, they started the season off by rolling back almost all of Jimmy's personal growth from the previous season and kind of hitting a reset button on that, and then ramp it back up to where, I mean, that's I guess the one criticism I could say is at the end of this episode, we're essentially where we were at the end of last season, where Jimmy's in his shitty little office where he's got some seed money and he's trying to hire Kim Wexler to be his partner in law.
Right.
Like, we've gone 10 episodes on a treadmill.
Yeah.
And they can't keep doing that.
In some ways. In some ways.
In a lot of ways.
Now, they potentially... Well, I don't know, because a lot has changed, too. I mean, the relationship with his brother has fundamentally changed. He and Kim are potentially now on the road to being, you know, if not actual business partners, partners in realty. like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's got its own complications. There's a lot of stuff that has changed, especially on like the Mike front.
Yeah, Mike for sure. Mike as a character has gone forward and transformed and done interesting things. I really can't say the same about Jimmy.
Yeah, I do feel you. It's stagnating a little bit, but I think the stuff that they've done, hopefully they will capitalize on toward the end of the season in the last few episodes.
Okay.
And really just let us know what the show is heading out of season 2. I guess let's move on to Kim showing up at Jimmy's office with the proposal.
Yeah, and Jimmy's got the young J.J. Abrams and assistant talking about a new commercial and dollies, and what the fuck is he going to be? What is he planning?
He's definitely getting back into the commercial game for his own solo practice, as he puts it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm super interested to see what kind of commercial he comes up with. Is it going to be a straight jump to Better Call Saul? Will he have the suits? Will he have anything like that?
Well, we know he has the suits now.
They're hanging on his door, sure, in his office.
Sure.
So he has the ability to make a Better Call Saul commercial.
Yeah.
He doesn't quite have the name yet, right? Maybe he'll look at the ring and go, oh, it's all good, man, and do it, but... But the answering machine message clearly says Jimmy McGill. He's just going with his name.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It'd be that. I don't. Also, you know, you need some transitions in a fossil record to go from Jimmy to Saul. So it wouldn't bother me. And here you already got this is kind of like the dinosaur of feathers, right? Mm-hmm. When he's doing all this flamboyant Jimmy stuff to get out from underneath Cliff's law firm. So, yeah, some more of that. Like, he can be Saul, but not in name.
Yeah.
So.
And really, like, that idea of inflatable, we know that in Breaking Bad, Saul has this giant inflatable Statue of Liberty over his office.
Yep.
So you can see where he gets the genesis of that idea as well.
I think he should come up with a version of the Lady Liberty that's doing that kind of
that would be
move busting.
Yeah.
So let's get to the chase here. Why is Jimmy unhappy with Kim's proposal here?
Because it's not more.
It is more.
It's more, but it's not the more he wanted.
Why?
He wanted...
Does he not see how crazy it would be for her to hitch to his wagon?
I know that. You know that. Jimmy doesn't know
that. Do you think he sees a ripped up card and that's all he can see? He can't look past the fact that, oh my God, this is a... You know, in his mind, they're already together and this is a separation. Like, I honestly, to me... it drove me crazy because, like, I'm thinking this is a great compromise.
Uh-huh.
She's still probably crazy because you could end up in jail and then she's going to have to pay double rent and all that shit. But
right. I still think it's getting in bed figuratively.
And together. You're trusting this guy not to have, like, some kind of fucking tiki bar lounge thing going on and his side. Like, you're trying to be corporate and respectable and it's like, you know, Tijuana across the border on his side of the fucking office. Like, right. It seems like she's putting more trust than is warranted based on their relationship in this season, and yet he's not happy with it. And there again, I found him kind of fundamentally unlikable in this episode.
Well, it makes me wonder if this is a move sort of out of necessity for Kim, because the idea that she's just going to cut ties with HHM and go out and strike out on her own, well, she's got these obligations. She has rent she'd have to make. She has electricity. She has school loans that she'd have to pay.
Sure.
She has a lot of overhead. And maybe the only way she can do it is if she has a partner, but she doesn't want an actual partner in Jimmy. So she's using this to kind of get what she wants in her own, not cynical way, but just, for her own
kind of like Stacy with Mike, like you made the offer, right? And so right. Why wouldn't you still? Okay, so that's actually, you've caught me flat-footed because I never even looked at it that way. That Jimmy could see this as you're taking advantage of all the things I was offering, but you are not giving me the thing that I wanted, which is the partnership,
right? And he doesn't answer conspicuously. He doesn't answer at the end of this episode, so we're left to wonder:
sure,
will he or won't he accept this offer? And I think he's going to. I think he will just to have a piece of Kim, to have a little bit more of her, but sure, whatever.
No, but that's the thing. Like, I think you're touching on something that bothered me throughout their initial dialogue when he's pitching, is that he talks about Kim as if she is something like a Pokemon that he needs in his deck.
Right.
Like, you know, in terms of this is something that I get, like, you know, want is a term that you can use for a lot of different things, but something about the way he used it and the way they framed Ray's reaction to it was objectifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't sit well with me. The way this relationship is going. Like, I like them when they're kind of on the same page about stuff, but sure. Once they start manipulating each other and using each other, it gets real gross real fast.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where we're at.
And they have this insane personal chemistry, and yet it seems like they're more in love with the ideas of each other than they are with the realities.
Or they like parts of it. This feels like where you go to your significant other and ask them for an open relationship, right? Like,
yeah,
this is the law equivalent of an open relationship.
Sure, yeah.
We're both going to cohabitate.
Yeah.
I
want us to support each other and love each other, right. But I'm definitely going to be boning other dudes.
Exactly. Okay?
Yeah, no, that's a pretty apt comparison, and that would explain his, like, fish landed on the deck, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't really want it to be that way, but I don't know. It's kind of the only way it can be. I don't think... Like I said earlier, I think the smartest decision she's made yet is to not go into business with him, because he's not reliable in that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's not willing to do what it takes to actually be a good lawyer, and she really wants to do that, so they're not compatible in business.
Yeah, agreed.
But that's all I've got. I have one more question. What the hell is he talking about with the kidney people wouldn't take his shitty old car?
Oh, so I guess there's various charities like AmVets and March of Dimes or whatnot where you can just drive your jalopy
Right. And they wouldn't take it. It's a joke. It's so shitty. They didn't want it.
Well, I mean, that's a fact, because like you can, you know, if you call the kidney people out and you've got a bunch of junkers in your car, like it costs money to haul off shitty cars and have them disposed of, you know, it's not free. So he's essentially that they're, I don't know that a car that's actually running would call, but that's clearly, yeah, he's essentially saying that my car is so shitty that even a free donation, donate our car, we'll fix it up and sell it or whatever, they won't even take it. Like, he would have to pay someone to haul it off.
Okay, I got that. I didn't know what he meant by kidney people.
It's just
Is he talking about partying out? It's just a charity?
Yeah,
made up one, or is it a real one?
It might be made up. I'm not familiar with that particular one, but I do know there's like the AmVets will, like, you can donate your clunker to them and they take
Goodwill even takes cars.
Goodwill. Yeah. I thought the March of Dimes does that too, which maybe they're. Okay. What does the March of Dimes do?
Somebody knows what the kidney people are. I feel like it's a real thing. Otherwise, that reference doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Someone will write in next episode and let us know about the kidney people. Do that.
Apparently they're all about premature birth, birth defects, and infant mortality, so that's not the kidney people.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Anyway, that's all I got for this episode.
So this is the part of the podcast where I get up and I flail and I'm colorful and try to attract people to the club, club.baldmove.com. What is the club? A club is a great way to support yours truly, Jim and I, as independent podcasters. Have we even had an ad this year on the Better Call Saul?
No.
So this podcast is not ad-supported, which means we rely entirely on the generosity of our audience to see the value and, you know, fostering discussion of some of your favorite television shows. And the only way we can do it is, again, with your generosity. If you go to club.baldmove.com, you can see that we offer ad-free feeds. Am I flailing enough? Am I colorful enough? I feel like I'm not.
I think if you recorded this from a dolly, you might have.
Really?
I need a dolly? Better luck, yeah.
What if I just squirt juice on you? Because I can squirt juice.
Okay.
It's one of the God-given talents.
Are you like a...
I don't think you'd like it. It's a Silence of the Lambs kind of deal, but it's possible. I could squirt juice on you. Is all I'm saying.
I can't stop saying squirt juice. I have these bagpipes I can play. Is that a good way to take the commercial out here?
I bet you do. You get ad free feeds, VIP access to forums, lots of different bonus features. We do at least one, usually two bonus podcasts a week called Cocktails or On the Rocks, rather. God, I can't get my branding straight.
Yeah.
Or Lunch with Jim and Aaron. We release podcasts and we have video feeds of that too if you can join us and watch live. Lots of other cool stuff, but you can see the full pitch at club.baldmove.com. But most importantly, it enables us to keep on doing what we're doing. And we appreciate everyone that supports us. Thanks.
Are we ready to go to feedback?
Yes, we are.
Let's do it.
BetterCastSaul@baldmove.com is where you want to send your emails or get on forums, forums.baldmove.com, to join in the discussion episode by episode.
All the episodes.
Let's get on to Greg S. He noticed the Royals shirt during his baseball week, too. But that was because I'm a baseball fan. I didn't think anything of it until you mentioned it on the podcast, and then it hit me. Kansas City is only 3 hours from Omaha. When things go bad and Jimmy becomes Saul, I always thought it would end up with Kim dying. But what if she just goes home to Kansas City to get away from Jimmy and HH&M or whatever the situation in Albuquerque may be? That's a natural place for the show to end, with future Saul in hiding in Omaha, just getting fed up and deciding to find Kim, consequences be damned. Then Kim has to decide whether to turn him into the authorities or let him go. I can't imagine she would take him back.
He's got
to
shave that mustache first. There's no way she takes him back with that mustache.
Maybe she's in hiding and she's grown one too.
All right. Yeah, so this is an interesting idea. I don't know that I want or need this to happen.
Would that be an interesting final scene for the show? A black and white Saul after he shaved his mustache, he's balding, and he goes to... knock on some, he goes on a road trip, you see him go into...
You see the sign that says Kansas City, Nebraska border, or whatever.
Or maybe he shows up at the Piggly Wiggly, or the Topsy Turvy.
Hinky Dinky.
He shows up at the Hinky Dinky, and she is, sad to say, a cashier.
Oh, God.
As a result of some fuckery that he's done to her, and that's like that. Just them looking at each other, that's how it ends.
Man, that's a sad ending for Kim.
Yeah, well, I mean, Saul's not a great one either.
Being reduced to exactly what she was before she set out on her life's journey.
No, what she was by Jimmy. Thinking that was her apex, like, yeah, before she wanted more. No, I'm not saying it's a cheery ending. I'm just saying it's kind of poignant.
No, yeah.
There's some version of that. I'm liking where Greg's going, is all I'm saying.
I don't know. That feels like it makes the series more about Kim than about Jimmy. But I don't know. At some point, I might like to see that.
I don't have a problem with that because so far, I think the series is at least as much about Mike as it is Saul.
Right.
And this season seems to be pushing this into Kim is her own standalone character. She got her own episode. So like, I feel like that might be kind of part of the show's DNA already.
Mm-hmm.
Andy A, double A, says, quick input on the Tuco's gun and Mike's gun charges. Something that we asked about. Why would Mike talk about having a gun charge? I assume that Tuco's gun had the serial numbers removed. This would lead to a charge of possession of an illegal firearm, no matter who owned the gun.
That's true.
Fair enough point, which is why he didn't. I think this episode, I got this email before this episode, but this episode made it clear that Mike is not claiming the gun as his.
Mm-hmm.
Like some magical stork dropped the gun out of the sky, something like that.
Bird flying overhead, sure. Dropped it. That's a terrible story.
No, but that's kind of the point that it's not our job to make the reality of the situation fit you.
And that felt very Saul to me. Yeah. And just, you know, hand wave. Just, who knows? It doesn't really matter. Let's gloss over that.
Yeah. Taylor B says, while you two were discussing Davis and Maine's new commercial, I thought about where they might go with this plot line in the future. My prediction is that D&M will continue to run this boring ass commercial and it will tank, as we all know it will. Later in the season, Jimmy will be playing with his balls and watching TV once again, only to see his commercial but with a new voiceover. I think Davis and Maine will go behind Jimmy's back and air his commercial after realizing how terrible their commercial truly is. I could see that.
Man.
Again, I got this before the latest episode, and I don't know what that would mean for Jimmy.
It's a double slap in the face, for sure.
It is. But on the other hand, like, legally, they'd be, because he did that work as, you know, it's a work for hire that
it's
did.
It's their work, sure. Yeah. It's their property.
So if they want to rip that off and put someone else's, put Cliff's boring-ass voice on it, they're entirely within their rights to do so. And I would argue that's what they should have done all along.
Right. It's a good commercial.
Not a fucking embarrassment for your law firm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see that happening, but I don't know what it would do to the arc.
Yeah. I mean, the only real effect I could see it having is making Jimmy angrier, making him feel more slighted by Davis and Maine. And what links will he go, you know, Chicago sunroof, Ed Begley Jr.'s car?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Well, I mean, the only thing, I guess, is I wish that Jimmy had stood up for himself a little bit on, because again, I don't know. What he did with the commercial is kind of indefensible, but on the other hand, I mean, I think he owed it to Cliff to say, like, you know, look, I get it. You didn't like the commercial. I should ask for permission. But once you told me that, you know, you're the type of law firm that wasn't going to allow any kind of style or pizzazz, and then you set Aaron on me, it was all over.
Right.
Like, why couldn't you have that adult conversation?
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like,
honestly, if
all
I was Jimmy,
was kind of already implied.
Rather, I guess, although if he's desperate to keep his fucking money, he can't get it out that he's dissatisfied and that he's going to, you know, want to quit or that this isn't working for him, because that would give Cliff more ammunition to, you know, taking the court and get his bonus back.
Right.
I don't know.
I think I've got a different idea with what Jimmy's going to do with this dolly and these kids.
You got an idea?
These college kids, yeah.
All right.
I think instead of doing the partnership with Kim, he's going to go into the cobbler video industry. He's going to start making squat cobbler videos.
Oh, yeah.
Posting them on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Saul'sSquatCobbler.com.
You get some cinematography on the squat cobbler scene.
Right, bring some
Take
class to the squat cobbler scene.
Sure,
it's been a cesspool for far too long.
It's just been these gonzo squat cobblers. Yeah. You want some, where's the romance? Where's the seduction?
Get some writing in there, some good dialogue.
Yeah, lighting, really costuming. The There's a lot of things you can do with it.
Uh-huh.
And when you got the Meryl Streep of squat cobblers to work with.
Maybe some licensing? I mean, get into like Star Wars squat cobbler? I mean,
sure.
Lucas was notorious for licensing out his stuff. So.
McDonald's Hot Apple Turnovers. That's like, you know, right? get that branding going. moving on to Barry C. from the UK. Do you think the inevitable tragic end for Kim and Jimmy as a couple will be the inevitable court case where they're representing opposing clients? One where perhaps Jimmy uses his colorful approach against Kim. There's a lot of inevitables used in this brief email, but that would be a ball buster.
Yeah, where they're pitted against each other.
That would
in
just
court.
Flatten one's wicker balls.
Oh, man, I could see it too.
And that's the thing. Like, I kind of feel like Jimmy could, because I don't feel like that. Like, Kim would hold back out of some sense of propriety and loyalty, and Jimmy could just steamroller with his crazy man approach.
Maybe out of, you know, feeling like a jilted lover, a jilted business partner, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Fine. She doesn't want me as a business partner. I'll be a business rival. And he'll move in to the same office in, like, under that sort of idea.
We don't really have a law talk this week, but Doug did send me a brief note about summary judgments that I was going to weave into the interview that we had with Kim, but then we got talked about our own bullshit and I forgot about it. But, you know, essentially a summary judgment is where, you know, you essentially say, here are the facts, and the facts dictate with the law that the plaintiff can't win. Mm-hmm. For example, he gave an example. Let's say a person got injured in 2012. And it's 2016, and New Mexico's personal injury lawsuit statute of limitations is 2 years. She got injured. I was like, there's no version of the facts that would let her have legal standing in this case. So, judge, please dismiss this. He wondered if it's a foreshadowing for some disaster that's going to befit this Davis and Maine case, some fatal flaw that's going to allow them to win a summary judgment, and it's all getting dismissed, and will that be a way to maybe reclaim? Because Jimmy's bonus, in large part, came from an estimated payout of what the class action lawsuit was going to be.
Right. Yeah. Was that a payment he was going to get from HHM?
I don't remember, because this was all fast and loose at the end of last season.
Yeah, I think that payment is coming from HHM. Like, that's the contract he signed to give them the case. Then he got the Davis and Maine job.
Yeah, because at this point, whatever happens to Davis and Maine doesn't really impact either Kim nor Jimmy. The only way it could is if they demand repayment of the loan because he or Chuck. Oh, that'd be funny if Chuck actually does something to the paperwork post-fact after he finds out about his bonus shit to screw Jimmy over.
He could,
because he was there at the very beginning of the case,
right, and Jimmy does stand to gain a lot from the settlement here, or whatever verdict they get.
Yeah, because
settlement,
that was a
verdict,
he's also going to get a piece on the back end too. I'm curious about how that's all impacted, but I thought that was interesting. Perhaps it's foreshadowing, perhaps it's not. Amanda G said, want to give you guys a little bit more context regarding the prominent placement of the Moscow Mules in last week's episode.
Okay.
I live near Chicago and have family there. I visit a lot. The Moscow Mule is probably the single most popular and most regarded as Chicago's drink. Almost every bar has one, usually featured prominently, and there are quite a few places that brag about theirs being the best in the city. Jim, as a displaced Chicagoan, as a temporary Chicagoan, is that consistent with your knowledge of the city?
I never heard that. I don't know. I'd never had a Moscow Mule until after I left Chicago. So.
Huh. Yeah, I did not know that about, you know, Chicago is like fairly close to Indianapolis. I spent a fair bit of time. And that's the weird thing about them bringing it in here is that scene had nothing to do with Jimmy. That scene was about Schweigert and Kim. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them, I don't think, are from Chicago.
Nope. We know Kim isn't. So yeah. Maybe Schweigert is.
I don't know. Maybe did they talk about him going to Chicago School of Law?
Not that I've heard. No.
All right. Mariana from Paris. We got an international listener. So I wanted to write in this week because I need to express my frustration with the Villa Gang hyper-symbolic storytelling. I love the beautiful visual storytelling in Breaking Bad, and I'm all for cool imagery with subtle undertones and hidden meanings. But my God, if they were to be any more explicit with their symbolism, this may as well be hitting us over the head with Thor's giant hammer. The number of times they showed us how, quote-unquote, Jimmy's old life doesn't fit in his fancy new life, i.e. the 7 billion insert shots of the coffee mug and the cup holder. and the last few episodes is ridiculous. We get it. And this week, with the never-ending montage of look at this floppy puppet, is Jimmy being pushed around by life. Look how he's imitating the colors. Look at him go out of control, moving erratically within certain winds, just like the puppet. Get it? Arg. Seriously, if it was a nice visual image, it was a nice visual image at first. We get it. We appreciate it. We're proud of you for using in a TV show, Vince, but please don't treat us like infants. Had that Coco Bolo desk not fit in Jimmy's old desk or office, had it the door not been able to shut by just a few inches, I may have gagged. Thankfully, they didn't feel the need to drive the point home that far, but damn, it was close. A point of dissent, I thought that would have been hilarious.
If the Coco Bolo
was just like a half inch too small to fit in that office. But I am sympathetic to your point because there was many reasons I was conflicted about this montage, and one of them is... They are, I mean, that's something that was in Breaking Bad, too. Like, that's how I invented the ham, you know, the bacon gauntlet of ham-fistedness. That a lot of times it's like, yes, they do the visual storytelling, but they really fucking underlined it in red pencil a couple times.
I feel like they're doing it more in this series. Maybe it's just because of late it's been prominent, but...
Well, and they've also got less, you know, and that's the thing. Chips to Scarface, Mr. Chips to Scarface is a much larger transformation than slipping Jimmy to Better Call Saul.
That's true.
In fact, it's not really a transformation so much as it is a recontextualizing of someone's motivation.
Almost an embracing of it.
Yeah.
You know, of who he actually is.
So it could be that it's just the same quantity, but since they're not shifting the mass that far, it's you can see the work being done a lot easier.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree. That's one of the few criticisms I do have with this show is...
But I feel like I'm criticizing because you're not one of the... You know, you happen to not be the one of the five greatest television shows ever.
Sure. Sure.
Some would say the greatest. Like, that's I don't know if that's valid criticism.
Right. And even when it's doing this stuff, it's still enjoyable to me. And... But not quite in the same way as Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
it is a different show.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, like I know we were, I feel like that we're having these conversations at this point in last season, and then the final two episodes happened, and nobody was really prepared for how kind of heavy they got.
Yeah,
and felt so.
And I mean, I could see that going this way for this season, too. There's a lot of shit with Kim that
and Chuck's in could submarine go real mode bad. For the last two or three episodes. And what the hell is Mike doing with the Salamancas? Or,
yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, I totally understand where you're coming from there, Mariana. But, you know, it could be judging on the Breaking Bad standards, or it could be that they just their tricks are more exposed because... They're employing them for lesser ends. I don't know. Joe,
or we're getting accustomed to them and we see them more often. You know,
sure. It's like for you what know, they are. If you go to see Penn and Teller in Vegas 50 times in a row,
yeah,
you might eventually spot how they stuffed their lobster down their pants.
I was gonna go catch bullet in the teeth, but yeah. Yeah, lobster in the pants. That's just as dangerous.
No, you know what? I reached for a trick, and I remember them pulling a lobster out of their pants on a Dave Letterman like 25 years ago, and that's what came. God. That's I asked for my brain to deliver, and that's what it did to me this
Young
time.
Young and impressionable, you remember lobster in the pants.
Sure. I'm like, how in the world do you keep that lobster down there without losing something? That's magic. Joe M. from Philly. When Mike respectfully declined to take the heat for the gun charge in Bally High... All I kept thinking was that there's going to be a big showdown that would result in Hector ending up with a wheelchair, being able to do nothing but sneer and ring a bell. And still, shit his pants.
Right? He can shit. The man can shit.
He can defensively shit his pants, or maybe offensively, anytime he wants.
Oh, yeah.
This was the build-up to that moment. For me, the tension was palpable when they had to sit down and they were playing their negotiation game over the gun charge. You discussed how you didn't feel as much tension in a showdown since at the taqueria or wherever they were. Because they knew that you knew that Mike and the cousins and Hector didn't die. But I was watching going, oh, shit, here it comes. It didn't happen, but it lent some tension to the scene. It lent some tension to the scene and made it effective for me. Afterwards, I went, oh, well, I was wrong. But after seeing Mike in the car staring ominously at the Salamanca gang headquarters, at the end of Inflatable, do you think that we now have a possibility of Mike making the leap into this future career by getting the notice of a Gustavo Fring because of the injuries that he will eventually inflict on Tio Hector, causing his paralysis.
Who's this Gustavo Fring you're talking about? Spoiler alert. Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential with Mike to push more toward Breaking Bad territory. You know, he can potentially cause an injury that might put Hector in a wheelchair. He could potentially run into Gus through all this.
These are my preconceptions. I assume that Hector just suffered a stroke.
Right. Right. But we don't know that for sure. Like, we don't actually know.
Even if someone, like, I wouldn't put it past for someone to assert that he had a stroke, but that could be inaccurate information. It could have been, right. like, what the D... I can't remember, because I want to say someone did say that, but it could be his nurse that was in the DEA office, and how the hell would she know that he suffered this at, you know, in a stroke and not... And can you get a stroke from the stress of a shootout? There's lots of...
I think it's Hank that says it. Room. He's like, stroke or no, these guys don't talk when he tries to bring him in, like, to finger Jesse. That
could be an assumption he made, just like I'm making the assumption now. So
right.
He's got a fair point that just because no one dies doesn't mean there aren't stakes and that's some true. Shit can't happen that would be pretty pulse-pounding.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as, you know, when he gets to notice of Gus, I don't know. I felt like I've made two predictions, failures on here in the season, so I'm quitting while I'm ahead.
Okay.
I want to try to not pull a Jimmy and just keep doubling down. But, you know, eventually that track will lead to the train station.
Yeah, eventually.
Jeremy J. says, what do you think about the idea that Kim and Jimmy.
Jim okay. and Cummy.
I'm just stopping the podcast now. I've got spring bake fever. I got spring bake fever.
You got spring break mouth. Yeah, I took one too many drinks. Or hits
I haven't
off
had
a
drop of alcohol since that shitty Americano last night. I'm drinking Diet Coke.
That's what did
and
it.
Water.
You need something to stabilize.
I got the shakes. I got the shakes.
Withdrawal.
Let's start this over. Jeremy J. says, what do you think of the idea that Kim and Jimmy become a couple and stay a couple, so that all through the Breaking Bad years, she was still with him, but we just don't see any of their interactions. That way she can be a bigger part of the Gene years in the future and could make for a surprising reveal. Would that be quote-unquote cheating?
I don't think it would be cheating.
If she's just a profoundly disappointed wife of Saul Goodman. And like, yeah, who'd you skip? You know, it's like she's just drinking like a fish. Who'd you scam that worked today, Jim? I told you not to come back. Whatever, Jimmy.
I'm Saul now. I'm Saul.
Or maybe she's just like totally. She's still working that her. We never saw the other half of the office.
Right. Right.
I don't know.
I don't see that happening, but I guess there's nothing that says it couldn't.
Didn't they imply that Jimmy had a sexual relationship with his receptionist as well? Jimmy implies a lot of
right,
shit.
Right. Right. Jimmy's going to flirt his way into whatever he can. He's gonna con his way.
Yeah,
he don't take anything he says seriously.
Yeah, because I'm like, well, I don't know that he would cheat on Kim, but then again, this is Saul, not Jimmy. I don't know. That would be a surprising revelation that she's still in his life, but we didn't see her, because why would we ever meet Saul's girlfriend / wife?
Right. Are we believing that Gus had a family?
I say no.
Okay. But it's possible he did.
Yep.
And the same could be true for Saul.
And that's pretty fucking deep cover.
Right. So the same could be true for Saul. Like, we just, you know, we never saw Gus's family, even though he has one. We never saw Saul's family, even though he has one.
Sure. Why would we?
Yeah. There's no
reason. We never saw Combo's mom. I know he had one.
I think we might have seen Combo's grandma.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Badger. Or right. Skinny Pete, or any of the. Yeah. I mean, everyone. Yeah.
We never saw Wendy's. Yes. Mother. We never saw Spooge's mother. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
They all have families.
They all had to come out of a woman's vagina at some point. We never saw evidence of that. That doesn't mean they didn't exist. So.
Right, and I feel like they do that with these things where they left the door open. They will come back in and kind of kick it open and say, here's something you didn't see before.
I feel like every time someone theorizes at the beginning of the season about Kim's involvement with the Breaking Bad universe, it gets darker and darker, because this might be, you know, the fact that she's still with Jimmy, that'd be such a fall from grace for her character
right
through the Breaking Bad years, that it's almost like, oh God, I hope she's just dead.
Yeah.
I hope she just got caught up in some kind of cartel violence. And it was a quick death, because my God, that's some bad shit. Yeah. I mean, the thing is,
well, the other thing is, he could just be Saul during the day and the parts of Jimmy that she really likes during the evening, you know? I mean, he might be able to separate those two things.
But he's such a criminal lawyer. And also, where was the mention of her when he's got to go flee to Nebraska?
Right.
Because we know he wasn't bringing anyone with him because he was sequestered with Walt down in the cleaner's basement awaiting transport. So
that's true.
Unless you're saying that Vince just didn't swing the camera around to the corner where she's sitting on
that's
her luggage,
too much. That's
staring
too much.
Daggers at him. Then he just ran
smoking those cigarettes, chain smoking.
Glaring. Yeah.
No, there's no way. There's no way Kim's still in the picture in that capacity.
But
she might still be alive, but I don't think she's with Saul.
I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, you're right. I totally forgot about that scene.
So, all right. That's all the feedback we got. If you want to send more, do it to bettercastsaul@baldmove.com.
Okay.
Or again, on forums, forums.baldmove.com.
All right.
Only got three more episodes to go, man.
Yeah, I hope they're...
In snuck up on me. I thought I remembered it being 12 episodes. I'm honestly finding it hard to keep track of which show does what.
Yeah, there's so many seasons we're covering at any given time.
Yeah, and like some of them have 16, some have 13, some have 12, some have 10.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Some of them say they have 10 and they end up, oops, we got 12, like American Horror Story last year. It's very confusing.
Yeah, but, we'll be back next week.
I forgot to announce this on Walking Dead, but Cecily and I are starting up the Banshee podcast.
When is that?
Starting next week.
Okay.
It's not going to have its own feed because this is the final season. It's only going to be 8 episodes, and I'm not going to start another iTunes feed and
make a logo.
The logo and all that shit for the final season that we want to cover. But we are starting it next week. It'll, cause a spring break, it'll probably be out Monday-ish, but it's going to be certainly out each Monday. It airs, late Friday night. We'll have the podcast out on Monday. So if you're a Banshee fan, go to the Bald Move TV feed, or just go to baldmove.com cause it'll be on the front page and you subscribe to the feed there. And we'll have Banshee coverage of the last season.
Okay.
Well, sure to be an insane final season.
That's an insane show. So
then,
yeah.
3 weeks from then, Penny Dreadful starts up, and we'll have we will have a feed and a logo and all that stuff for Penny Dreadful.
Okay,
there you go. Some Bald Move news.
Sounds good.
News you can use.
We will be back next week, and until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.